podcast. This is Joe Gladyszewski, joined tonight by Mike Eidelbiss. We are chatting just hours as we record this before the 2017 Frozen Four. Hello, Bus.
Hello. Small area podcast tonight.
Yeah, we're going back to individual skill work here. Gonna go through some things that we saw at the regional. I said to Bus the other day, do we want a podcast before the Frozen or after the Frozen or both or neither? And the answer, of course, was both. So we'll have this up. You've obviously found it through our social media and inchwriters.com, and hopefully something to listen to as you make your way out to the Frozen Four or get ready to watch the games this weekend on TV. So, Bus, let's start with regionals. It's a few days back, more than a week ago now. What's your takeaway, I guess? What stood out to you from the way the maybe regions aligned or the brackets set up? What would you like to see in that?
Well, I think that there were two things that probably more than two once I start talking, but what stood out to me was, kind of when you looked at the brackets beforehand, I think that when you looked at it, at least I thought, okay, this team's going to come out of here. And it seemed fairly cut and dried. And I think once they played the games, you kind of look back on what happened and you say, you know, boy, any of those four teams in the Fargo Regional, for example, could have come out of that, could have come out of there into the Frozen Four. The Manchester Regional was awfully competitive, and even I think even the Denver region or the regional that Denver was in Cincinnati was competitive to a certain extent, or at least it was intriguing,
right?
Based on how those games played out, and I think I think going in, if you would have said which one of the four regions do you see playing out, kind of where the number one's going to more or less carry the day, I think the Providence region would have been that selection. And, you know, that's kind of the way it worked out. It wasn't terrifically easy for Harvard, but I don't think they ever felt threatened in that region per se. So, but I thought top to bottom, maybe if you throw the Providence regional out of there, I thought all the games were really competitive and compelling.
Yeah, there weren't too many games that you turned off early.
Right.
Cornell Lowell, probably one of those. Not that that was on, terrestrial TV anyway. That was a webcast game. Even, Penn State Union, when that gets out of hand, you kind of want to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Because it snowballed so much for the Nittany Lions in that game. I was talking to a local radio station. I do some work with and follow Cornell and college hockey stuff, and we did a little segment before the tournament started, and I said anything can happen, we don't know what to expect, and we said that on our Selection Sunday podcast. And then when we regathered after the regionals, I said, well, it was kind of what you expected, so it's contradictory, but in the three cases, the number one seeds go through. And what that tells me is, if you were to judge, no matter what the metric is, national polls, overall record, any of the comparison rankings that you use, over the course of the season, the whole run of it, who were the three best teams? I think you would say Denver, Harvard, Minnesota, Duluth. And those,
yep,
those three teams were number one seeds, and they went through to the Frozen Four. So that makes sense to me. And I think if you were looking at these regions, and again, we touched on this in our previous podcast, the most up-in-the-air group was that Manchester quartet. I think you'd make cases for any of those teams that could have pulled out of that group, and that's the region that the number four seed comes through with Notre Dame. So that's, and of course that was Minnesota, UMass Lowell, Cornell, and Notre Dame in that group. So that, to me, was kind of how things shook out. Of course, you had the loaded group in Fargo, and that it didn't waste any time. That first game was double overtime, two powerhouse teams in North Dakota, Boston University, and then Minnesota Duluth, and I'll talk more about this later. against Ohio State, you know, goes another overtime game, and then that was pretty big time stuff. So, you know, if you were a committee member, say you had, you know, the basketball selection style or even the football playoff, you know, with the four teams, if you could have swapped one team out from, say, maybe that Fargo regional to the Providence regional, would you have done that for balance?
It's so hard to say. I think that, even when you look back at the Providence Regional, I mean, maybe, and I have to admit, I didn't see a lot of those games. And what I did see, it looked like Harvard was kind of stringing along, stringing along, stringing along, and then they kind of explode, and then all of a sudden it's, 4-1 or whatever the score was. I just, and it, you know, and Air Force, I thought, I think maybe the Providence Regional was just a victim of some circumstance more, maybe upon closer inspection, because, you come out and Western Michigan didn't get off to a great start in that game, and Air Force obviously did, but, Western what rallied to make it a, a closer game, and even in the final, Air Force rallied to give Harvard a little bit of a scare, so. I guess maybe in the end, and I it kind of worked out, and I think maybe what helped Manchester was that, theoretically, Minnesota was the number one seed, but I think if you looked at that region on gave it the eye test, I think you probably would have seeded Lowell number one. I mean, they were clearly playing better coming into the tournament. Notre Dame was playing well, other than their loss to Lowell in the Hockey East
Yeah.
semifinals, and Cornell was playing pretty well too. I mean, they look good in the ECAC tournament. So, maybe it was. It's such a strange dynamic when you more or less throw these teams into regions, and you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and how. Maybe you're Cornell and you get a goal disallowed at 3 minutes in, and then everything just kind of goes by the wayside after that,
Yeah, Cornell had
So.
9 losses on the year, 3 to Harvard, and then, you know, that Lowell game included. So that's how that
And
goes.
they looked great in this in the semifinal game of the ECAC tournament
Against Union, yeah, that might have
against
been,
Union. I mean,
yeah.
they were it might have been their best game of the year.
It was up there. It was up there.
So,
So
and then you're feeling good about that, and then Union goes and just gets rolled by Penn State. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know that anybody saw that coming, but
Yeah, it was a 3-3 game, and then it was a 10-3 game.
yeah, that was
So
amazing.
that's that story. We've gotten into teams a little bit here. Any team takeaways? What's the one that stood out for you on that?
I was very encouraged by the way Denver played. Sometimes I think there's a narrative out there about the number one overall seed maybe being cursed or getting knocked out. But Denver wanted no part of that. They were motivated. They came in and got after Michigan Tech right away, came in and got after Penn State right away, although that game got closer. Actually, both games got closer, but I mean, Denver was the number one overall seed, and they showed it.
Yes, yes.
And I know we're going to talk a little bit about Duluth, obviously, as we progress. But and this is obviously a trend that you've seen with them. But I mean, they don't like to make things easy for themselves. I mean, they were kind of. You looked at that Ohio State game, they're up 2-0 in the third. It looks like they're going to coast, and all of a sudden it's 2-2 going into overtime.
Yeah, and the goalie's on his head.
The goalie was on his head. There was absolutely no momentum at all
Yeah.
in Duluth's favor at that point in time, going into OT. And then the same thing a little bit happened against BU where they're,
Yeah, BU scores 2 goals early in the third, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so.
So Duluth does not like to make it easy on themselves.
Yeah, we'll get more into that. Around predictions time, hint hint.
And then the other thing too, I mean, The other takeaway I have as far as teams is, in order for Notre Dame to be successful, I think if you would have asked for keys, you'd have to say that Anders Bjork has to be their best player and Cal Peterson has to be at his best. And you know what? They both were. And now Notre Dame's in the Frozen Four. I mean, exactly. Anders Bjork was phenomenal and he didn't score a goal.
Yeah, our good friend Nate Ewell was at those games in Manchester, and he just, we asked what was the story up there. He said Anders Bjork, Anders Bjork, Anders Bjork, and then you get a goalie who, going into this Frozen Four, not to take anything away, I mean, this is maybe the four best goalie Frozen I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, I would say so.
You know, if you had to rank them 1 to 4, it's not easy to do. And if you look at just recent form, I mean, Tanner Gillette, he was good, you know, but he didn't have to be great.
No.
And because of how comprehensive Denver was.
Well, and in game one, what do they get spotted? A 5-0 lead,
yeah,
against Tech, and it was 3-0 or something like that against Penn State. That, you know, that helps the goalie immensely.
Yeah, it sure does.
And Madsen's been good for Harvard, and Miska, obviously, I mean, he was their best player. I don't think anybody would argue with that. He made two absolutely ridiculous saves in that overtime against Ohio State.
You give him 1 in 20 shot of making either of those, and he makes them both. And, you know, it's not like, hang with them, we'll get them tomorrow. It's season over.
Right.
And now there they are in the Frozen Four. And, I mean, we've chatted about this. I guess I'll just come out. You know, this, you look at that situation with Minnesota Duluth and coming out of that Fargo Regional and how those games went. And you wonder, man, you know, they just go into these funks. They go into these slumps just within a game. 10 bad minutes, 12 bad minutes. But they dig out of it. I mean, this team has that resilience, to me, that kind of shows up. I mean, you go back to early season series against St. Cloud State. They come back from 2 goals down 2 nights in a row, you know, in the third period. They do a lot of that stuff. And we saw it, I think, at Minneapolis and, you know, in the Nacho tournament. And, you know, they've got that thing about them that they don't get rattled when things aren't going their way. And they're okay with that hang on for a while, dear life. Let's get through this part of it, whether it's killing a 5-minute penalty, whether it's, you know, being hemmed in a little bit by Ohio State and you need some big saves, whether it's, you know, an injury, a guy missing a couple shifts. They're around it and they do that. And, you know, you see it in their record. If you go back to some of their situational stats, they've got, I had it the other day, and here's when they are trailing or tied after two periods, they're 10-6-5. So they're winning the third period more than not.
Yeah.
And they didn't lose any games when they were ahead going to the third, 17-0-2. So that, to me, is a pretty strong quality and characteristic to have about yourself when you're going into this kind of a tournament. And I don't know, there's something about it. I've watched them all year, and, you know, we talked at, Super Bowl time, maybe first week of February, and we talked at the Selection Sunday podcast, and I can't get away from thinking this is the team that has it this year. And it's funny to me because maybe I watched too much Coach's Corner growing up, but is there such a thing?
No.
But, you know, you look at all the analytics and the Corsi and, you know, 5-on-5 shots for, and, you know, zone starts and all this other stuff. And I get that. And a lot of people are finding value in that. To me, I think this is a little bit of a throwback team. They make it personal. You know, they play hockey against people, and I like that about them. I don't know that anybody in Toronto and obviously it was a while ago, would tell you about Wendell Clark's, Corsi rating. But you want him out there,
Yeah.
in the playoffs. So you look at guys that traditionally have been great playoff performers and how they raised their game up. It seems like they raised their game up at that time of year, and I think they've got a lot of those guys. And that's what I really like about this team.
Yeah, I was just looking at their third period numbers. In third period scoring, 45 goals for 25, 48 goals for 25 goals against. And in league play, which I think it's fair to say that NCHC is the best conference, or
Yeah, the metrics bear that out too, you know.
plus 15 in the third period. So obviously, I mean, that's their, that's what they do, is they, kind of play even for first two periods, and then they're like, okay, the third, this is where we take charge.
Yeah, I like that about them. Any other players that kind of stood out to you? We talked about Peterson and Bjork a little bit, and obviously Miska with those saves. That shouldn't take away from Troy Terry.
No. No, he was pretty good. He was all over the place against Penn State.
Yeah, that's a good, and I think it's a good opportunity. The value that you see in these regionals, maybe even still with as much exposure as there is now, and the television coverage and online web streaming and just social media exposure, if you're based in New England, you can follow the NCHC, and if you're based in Denver or Colorado Springs, you can follow Hockey East. You can see these guys more than just, oh, I saw him play five games at World Junior and I saw him, in his league tournament and then this regional. So I think even with all of that, Troy Terry's still known as the shootout guy.
Right, exactly.
And for him to have that kind of a performance and show his complete, game and ability to score in open play is a credit to him and obviously the kind of year that he's had.
Yeah, the one thing, and I think we talked about this back around Super Bowl time too, is just, I'm so impressed with Denver's depth. And Duluth is not that far off in terms of depth.
Or Harvard.
And or Harvard, yeah, there you go. You've got a Terry out there, obviously. Dylan Gambrell, Borgstrom. Then you get you go down their roster, and you've got a kid like Jared Lukosevicius. I always say that wrong. Lukosevicius.
Luco Savages.
Luko Savages.
That's it.
There's no G in there. That's what screws me up.
Well,
He's a good.
I think
He's a
it
good.
came about and they just went with it. And now
Yeah.
it's awesome.
He's a good Squamish BC boy. Who's gonna, he goes out and scores two goals against Penn State, and you've got a Matt Marcinou, scores 10 goals on the year.
And
You
oh,
got
by the
well.
way, you have a Hobie hat trick finalist.
Yeah, you've got a and a good goalie, and
Yeah.
even they've got those depth guys that, they've got the senior depth guys. They've got
Romig,
an Emil Romig, and
Jansen.
yep, back on defense they've got Van Voorhis, who's played like 140 career games. It just so deep, and everybody contributes.
Yeah,
That
they're
bench doesn't get short.
no. I like that. I like that about them. And maybe that's another part of the Terry, understated, as you and I at least observe it. Because there's so many other guys, he doesn't get the kind of singular notoriety that Anders Bjork would. Because,
Yeah.
because just different roster kind of composition at least this year. So that's where that stands. We talked about Hobie Hattrick. You've got Will Butcher from Denver, the defenseman. You've got Zach Aston-Reese, the Northeastern senior. And you've got Mike Vecchione, the Union senior. Three seniors in this Hobie Hattrick group. And what a couple things here we'll get into now. We segue Hobie talk, I guess. Number one, has the Hobie lost its luster?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a couple days ago, and you know, I brought it up, and now that I've had time to kind of let it stew in its own juices, so to speak.
Crackpotting.
Yep, exactly. The Yankee pot roast is ready to go. Has it lost its – maybe it feels like it has lost its luster a little bit. And although if you would have asked at the beginning of the season, you know, who are 10 candidates, you probably would have had Aston-Reese and Vecchione in that mix, just based on their past results. So I guess in that respect, we shouldn't be surprised about those two. And, you know, Butcher's clearly a good player. You know, he's All-American last year. Maybe it hasn't lost its luster, but you look at the names of the people that have won it in the recent past, you know, specifically the last 3 years, you've got VC, you've got Johnny Gaudreau, and you've got Eichel.
Right.
So, I mean, those are marquee names.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe it's not the award that has lost its luster, but just that, you know, we had these bright lights guys that were from day one kind of theirs to lose. So we all watched, we all followed, and clearly they lived up to expectations and they won. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe this, I don't think the award has lost its luster, as much as, you know, the three seasons prior, we had guys in the spotlight right away. And it never strayed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, VZ, 46 points last year, won the Hobie. And if I'm not mistaken,
doesn't Aston-Reese have like 62?
Aston-Reese and Vecchione are way ahead of that.
Yeah.
So here it comes. Yeah. Aston-Reese 63, Vecchione 63. So. You know,
so they're all right there.
So it's notoriety more than, and maybe notoriety, and maybe the size of your school. I mean, it seemed like there was quite a run, and you know, you can look back that you've got, you know, say mid-2000s, Matt Carl Denver, Ryan Duncan North Dakota, Kevin Porter Michigan, Matt Gilroy BU, Blake Jeffrey on Wisconsin. You know, those are the original six. You know, those are the big names.
Yep.
You know, it's like, we're going to have trouble imagining a Hart Trophy winner from the Nashville Predators. You know, it's maybe some of that as well. It factors into this for a long time. And this will go back to a point I made a little while ago. I think maybe the nature of the award and the importance of the regionals. And I think that played such a big role, at least, you know, 10, 12 years ago when I was voting and you were voting. For me, you know, you and I obviously followed the entire nation every day of the season because of what we did with the website. But for maybe a, you know, radio guy from a CCHA team or a beat writer from, you know, a Hockey East team who's in the rink every Saturday, who is following and paying attention to a certain team or a certain league, you know, how do they evaluate a guy? Now that there's more opportunity and more information available, I think it helps the voters. But I think the regional round used to play a huge, huge role in determining that because it was kind of the last viewing. And you get that recency bias. And to me, that surprised me a little bit. Number one, from what I thought of him all year, and number two, from what he did in the regionals, that maybe Anders Bjork didn't get a bigger push out of what he did in getting his team to a Frozen Four out of a pretty, really tough Manchester group.
Yeah, he's an interesting case, because he kind of, you know, he had his season was kind of a, he got off to a great start, and then he kind of flagged a little bit in the middle of the season. I know he actually missed a game or two because he was sick. Mm-hmm. I think he had the flu or something, and you know, he really kind of he was kind of invisible for about a 6 or 8 game stretch there in the middle of the season. Then he came on strong again at the end. So, you know, so he wasn't consistently good. When he was good, he was very good. And I think back to the goal he scored against Boston College in December at Notre Dame when Notre Dame rallied to beat BC. They were down 2-0 and rallied to beat them 3-2. He scored a shorthanded goal that was just ridiculous. And, you know, it was, you know, had something like that happened in, you know, maybe it happens in late January. It's something that kind of maybe sticks in your mind, or mid-February or something like that. But it literally was the first game or the last game before the break. And it was kind of a moment, and then you sort of forgot about it. You know, and it was kind of a crescendo up to, you know, he was kind of building up to that point as, you know, through the first half of the season. And then he came back and got sick, and Notre Dame kind of scuffled there for about, you know, 3 weeks in January. And, you know, by the time he got it going again, well, there's other, you know, Aston Reese was on a roll, and, you know, people were looking at Union. And so I think that played a role into it. And it kind of feeds into what you're saying, is that people have more of a, you know, you're able to track this stuff over the long term, and it's not just, you know, it's not just you pull up the stats on March 15th and see who's where and then cast your ballot, or, you know, keep a close eye on them in the regionals and then make your vote. I think it's a bit more of a long play now, which is good. I mean, in the long run, it's good, because you're getting a better candidate, somebody who's been consistent from day one.
The goal you were talking about against BC, better or worse than the Ryan Thang goal against Michigan?
Boy, that Thang goal was an all-timer. I think just be
best goal for Notre Dame since then.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, without question. I mean, the move that he made, I happen to be there, that I don't think I've seen a goal like that since Thang. I mean, it was just in a shorthanded goal, and it was just amazing for him to, I mean, he had the goalie thinking pass all the way, mm-hmm. to the point where he's facing the boards, and then all of a sudden he just tees it up and flicks a wrister, and Joe Wall, who's a good goalie for BC, he got owned.
Mm. Yeah. Little inch romance, that Ryan Thangle, Denver Frozen, what, 08?
Yep.
Yeah, nuts.
Yep, chased Billy Sauer, did it not?
It came with 30 seconds left in the period. I remember something like that. So, all right. Hobie pick. Who do you think will win? Who do you think should win?
You know, either of those, any of those three could win, and I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think it's going to be one of Aston Reese or Vecchione, and I think it might be Aston Reese, which would be kind of odd, because, I mean, Northeastern didn't even make the Hockey East semifinals. I mean, they didn't get out of the first round of the tournament.
Yeah.
Actually, did they get out of the first round? Yes, they did get out of the first round. They beat Connecticut. But he's a really good player. And, you know, I think when you look at Union, there's kind of a tendency, maybe, you know, to kind of wonder, okay, is it Vecchione and Fu or, you know, line mates? Is it kind of one drives the other? Are they, you know, is it a mutual benefit type of thing? And I don't know if that enters into voters' consciousness at all, but I'm going to lean toward Aston Reese.
I think Vecchione could get a tick for, number one, having been there before. His name's been around longer.
Yep.
And he was part of a national championship team as a freshman.
Yeah, there's that too.
So, and Union made the NCAAs. I mean, when I was a voter, that mattered to me.
Yeah.
Not to just, you know, discredit a guy who's having a great season. I mean, you go back to maybe Corey Conacher at Canisius, you know, that's unbelievable. Great stuff. But what does it mean in the larger landscape? And to me, I think that might give the Union player a little bit of a tick. Let's review regional predictions.
Actually, we did okay.
Yeah. And we had Kevin Zeese and Nate Ewell with us Selection Sunday. And for a lot of it, we were pretty similar. All four of us had Denver going through. That happened. So good job, everybody, picking the number one overall seed. For smart guys, in the Manchester region, nobody had Notre Dame. There was three Lowells, and I had Cornell coming out of that group. In the Providence group, Kevin and Bus both had Providence. Nate had Harvard, and I couldn't trust Harvard, so I went with Western Michigan. So Nate was right on that one. And then in the Fargo bracket, you and I both had Minnesota Duluth, and Nate and Kevin both had North Dakota. So 2 for 4 for a couple of us, and 1 for 4 for Kevin. So that was kind of the way that went. Let's get into this week. Thursday night, Denver, Notre Dame. We talked about that it factor with Minnesota Duluth. And I think maybe Notre Dame has more of it from what I've seen than Denver. But I just... I think it comes down to would you rather go in with the two very best players in the game or the next 10 best after that?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I think that you know, when I think of the way Denver goes about their business, and this is probably going to be a terrible analogy for half the country, but
are you going to go Simpsons?
No, I was going to I was going to go New England Patriots.
Ah.
You know, they just, they're businesslike in their approach.
Yes.
You know, and I don't know that I don't think that there's a swagger about them, but there's just a quiet confidence that, okay, if we, you know, you line up against us and we play 60 minutes and we're going to be the better team.
Yep.
I just feel like that they've got that mindset that, you know, that you're not going to beat us. If anybody beats us, it's going to be us. And we're not going to do that. So long story short, you're going to lose. I just, you know, I think that had you asked at the going into the regional what you needed from Notre Dame, you know, you know, for them to advance, you needed Bjork to be at his best and Peterson to be at his best. Well, I think they need to be better than their best if that's possible. I mean, they're going to have to turn in, you know, for Peterson, it's going to have to be Terrari-esque, I think was the
Terrari mode activated.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and Bjork, from Bjork, obviously not in, you know, he doesn't need to score three goals, but but he's got to be the person that gets everybody involved. And that's really his, that's what made Notre Dame advance out of that regional. It was, you know, he just took over the game, but not by scoring. He took over by setting up his teammates and putting them in a position to be successful. And he's got to continue to do that if they want to advance. So it's going to be an interesting matchup.
Jeff Jackson knows what he's doing this time of year. And one thing that Nate mentioned about the regional was that he had Anders Bjork playing on two different lines. Number one, get your best player out as much as you can. And number two, make it very hard for the other team to get that defense pairing that they want out against, you know, this line. Because if you're picking it based on, quote unquote, the first line or the second line, and Bjork's moving between those, how do you key on that? And then are you chasing the game? And once that starts happening, you know, you're not worried about your own business.
Right. He'll flip them around and it's something that he's kind of done all season is, you know, he'll flip them around between, sometimes he'll be on Jake Evans's line with Cam Morrison, another player who was really good, I thought, in Manchester. And sometimes he'll put him with Andrew Ogilvie, who really benefited from playing with Bjork. I mean, I think he had 5 goals coming into the season. And this year, in his sophomore year, he scored 21. So, he'll make some shifts there, and you know, it makes sense. Get him out against whomever, and you know, force the hand a little bit, and you know, Denver will get the last change, obviously. So, they'll have the upper hand in that regard. But you know, both teams in Manchester had the last change, and it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah. Other game. Harvard, Minnesota Duluth. To me, this is the game I'm most excited for in the entire tournament since North Dakota BU. I think these are excellent teams. If the brackets were aligned differently, I would have had a Harvard Minnesota Duluth final in my bracket projection or prediction. That's how much I think of these two clubs. And I think that you've got a little bit of a different style and a little bit of a different way of going about your business. If it's called tightly and Minnesota Duluth is aggressive, which they will be, Harvard's power play can change things really quickly. They've got a lot of talent out there. I think that Minnesota Duluth gives Harvard a challenge in how they play, especially against other the opposing team's defensemen. They want to be in on the forecheck. They want to make it miserable. They want to be tough on those guys. And I think Harvard's defensemen like to play more with the puck than without it. So we'll see what kind of challenge Minnesota Duluth will provide to Harvard, and they're going to make it tough to get that puck out of the zone.
Yeah, and they're not going to let it's not going to be a it's not going to be the kind of game where Harvard's defensemen are going to have a chance to carry the puck out of the zone. I mean, it's going to be quick pass out.
Yeah, keep your head up and chip it along the wall. Yeah.
Yep. If they want to get out, you know, unless they want to get beaten up, which is going to happen, and it's going to happen in waves because. You know, that's how they do it. They're just going to keep sending guys and do their thing.
Yeah.
That seems like, and maybe I'm off base on this one, but that seems kind of like a game where, you know, you talk about maybe in the Denver Notre Dame game a little bit, there might be a little bit more tinkering and adjustment. This seems like a game where you got two teams that are just going to come out and do what they do.
Yeah. I hate to.
I think Harvard's going to maybe tinker a little bit, as you talked about with the defense, but I mean, they're going to want to get the puck and go because that's what they do.
You can change a breakout. You can change, you know, some of that stuff, but at the end of the day, is it too simple to say
you are who you are?
Well, these teams are what they are, and I like that about them, and that'll be the case. But is it too simple to say it's Miska versus Madsen? Who's going to have a bit better night?
I don't think that it's too simple to say that.
It's boring, but it's probably the right way to look at it.
And it's not just overall, but it's not overall, like, you know, if one guy it's going to be, as we talked about Miska making those saves against Ohio State, it's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
That guy who makes the big save in the key moment. Because they've been good. I mean, they've been similarly good, excellent the entire season. It's going to be which guy makes the big save at the right time.
Another similarity, third period scoring differential. Harvard plus 25, 56 goals for, 31 goals against. And, of course, that is in fewer games, 35 total games. So that's Harvard's situation. We talked about what Minnesota Duluth has done in 17 games, which they were tied or trailed heading into the third period. Harvard just had 4 games.
Wow.
Four games they were tied, 8 games they were behind, and they are 5-5-2, so still they're not out of it going into that. I think that it's going to be maybe how each team responds to surges. We've seen that, and we've talked about how Duluth can bounce back from a rough patch. What will be Harvard's response when they're hemmed in a little bit too? So that to me is just an A+ game. Can't wait to see it on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
That'll be good. If we were to say Denver's the prohibitive favorite to come out of that late semifinal, would you still have them favored against both Harvard and Duluth?
Yeah, I think I would. Just because I think that they've just. I'm going back to what I saw from them in the regional, where they were just, you know, it was coming out first period, and I mean, they were ready to go. There was no adjustment period. There's no, you know, feeling out process. It was just, okay, we're here. We got a job to do. Let's go do it. And they did it. And I just like that about them. And, you know, and did they have some, you know, against Penn State, I guess you could say a little bit, there were some iffy moments, but I mean, out of the 60 minutes or 120 minutes they played in Cincinnati, when did Denver look shaky? You know, maybe, what would you say? 10 minutes?
Yeah, maybe 10.
Maybe. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's a pretty comprehensive group right there. But I'll tell you what, I'd be excited for that, no matter how those, you know, even not to say even Notre Dame, but if Notre Dame were to win, that's still a great game on Saturday night. These are setting up to be 3 very good games.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I like that about the weekend.
I think so too. I think that this is, you know, there have been years where you kind of look at the Frozen and you say, okay, well, this team, you know, is the favorite, and you know, this team's got a shot, and you know, this team, well, they'd have to do a lot of things right and kind of go down the line. Well, this year, I think you can, you know, granted, Notre Dame comes in as the underdog, but you can still see a way where they could beat Denver and win the championship, and you'd say, well, yeah, you know, I could, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not like Villanova beating Georgetown in 85 or whatever by shooting 70% from the field, you know.
Yeah.
It's not going to take an effort like that for any of these teams to win two games this weekend.
I've got a bad habit, maybe it's a good habit, of when I'm reading an article, any article, any topic, and I get to a point where usually a columnist will write a sentence that I don't agree with or don't like, and I just stop there. It's just, okay, exit. And I got to that point today with a South Bend Tribune column, and maybe third or fourth paragraph, they compared it was about Cal Peterson, what he does for that team. Number one, Peterson's last name was misspelled in the headline. Can't put that on the columnist.
Yeah.
But secondly, he alluded that a Notre Dame win over Denver would be similar to the Mississippi State women's basketball team beating UConn last week.
Well,
and that's
no.
Why I hit X. Okay, we're done with this article.
Yeah.
So, yeah, different deal.
A lot different.
A lot different. But Notre Dame's a 4 seed against a 1 seed, and Mississippi State was a 2 seed. No, not the same. Denver hasn't won 10 national championships in a row.
Hasn't won 111 straight or whatever it was.
So.
Yeah.
All by 20 points or more.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, that was that. So that's the women's basketball segment of the Inch Podcast. Special shout out to Full Pelini while we're in this neighborhood. Best parody account writer has maybe some Inch humor in how he looks at things, and tweeted out last week, "This is the best Mississippi State UConn women's basketball game I've ever watched." Thumbs up.
That's good.
Yeah.
And we're laughing at the joke. We're not laughing at women's basketball because that was a...
I watched it. I watched the last 8 minutes.
I did too.
Yeah.
I watched it as well.
Yeah. So, a lot of folks watched it. You could tell.
It was the highest rated sports telecast on that night.
Yeah. So, what, Friday night?
Friday night.
Yeah.
It outdid the NBA.
Yeah, yeah, it would have. And baseball didn't start yet, but that's okay.
Nope.
Not that it would have rated higher. I mean, the Mariners and Astros series is fantastic, but it wasn't going to beat that. I think we're winding our way into deterioration here, Bus. Anything?
Well, do you want to do some picks?
Oh, yeah, I guess we never did that. We did the analysis part. We didn't do the picks part.
Yeah, we kind of showed our hand, I think. But
so you're on the Denver thing, and I'm on the Duluth thing. Is this where
I'm leaning Denver. I'm leaning Denver just because I don't see I don't see any glaring weaknesses there.
I think that there's something to be said. I'm a believer in you got to get that crummy game out of the way before the tournament. And I think Denver did that in Minneapolis and kind of, reset, and then they can get after it. And we saw what they did in the regional. So I agree with that part of it. I can't get away. And, we've talked all year and all throughout this podcast that I think Duluth has that formula. They have that it factor. And, it took me a long time to figure this out. Covering college hockey and other sports, whether it was pro hockey, high school football, whatever it might have been, you get to a championship-type situation and you hear from a coach or from the players, and this is the best locker room we've ever had. This is the best group of guys. We're all like family. We get along so great. And you hear that over and over again, and I sit there and take your notes and check your recorder, and you say, okay, now give me something I can use.
Right.
But it took me a while to figure out that's kind of the deal. And we don't have to go, any further back than 52 weeks. How many talented, super talented North Dakota teams went to this Frozen Four between 2000 and 2016? More talented than last year's team, and didn't come away with that. But that North Dakota team last year kind of had that it about them.
Yeah.
And in Inch history, you've mentioned, we've always mentioned that, those Denver, the Boston Denver team back 05,
Yep.
I guess, right?
05.
04, four.
04, yes.
Yeah, 5 was the Columbus Denver team. So, so I think that's a thing. I believe in it, and I think Duluth has it. So that's what I'm going with there.
Yeah, they do seem like they have that. And it's kind of funny you mentioned North Dakota, because I think, from afar, you kind of felt that that team was that team was the team that had it. And then you jump into this season, and it seemed like they were kind of
Yeah.
chasing that chemistry that they had last year. And due to departures or injuries or what have you, they never got it. It seemed like they were always trying to catch up to that. Okay, let's recapture what we had last year, and it just never materialized.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a different, batch of ingredients. You just
Yeah.
Should we do an, Adam Burrish shout out?
Yeah, you talk about, there's a guy
Yeah.
that had it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at guys like that, and was he maybe the, top 6 to 8 talented players on that Wisconsin team from 06? I'd say no. And
No, not when you've got a Robbie Earl and Pavelski and
Elliot and
Elliot and Gilbert and
Yeah. So
Jumpin' Joads and
Jones, yeah. So, but he plays
among
350-ish games in the NHL, and
yeah.
he's hard to cut. He's one of those guys you put in the room and put out there and ask him to do a job, and he's gonna do it. So, I think that's a thing. What about momentum? Both from a hockey standpoint and from a exposure media fan interest. Deal. We're excited. Frozen Four is coming up a couple days, but going back to look at these regionals, it does feel like about a month ago.
Yeah, it does. And I think there's something to be said for just getting on with it and playing. But there's also something to be said for, and I wish Nate were here to, because he went through it when it was, he probably went through the most extreme version of it in what year was that, 99 or 90,
99.
99, winning
A regional.
When winning a regional on a Sunday and then having to ship out to Anaheim for the Frozen Four, 48 hours later or whatever it was.
Yeah, maybe less than that, yeah.
That obviously that's the way it used to be. And then whereas in whatever year it was, 2001, when Michigan State won in Grand Rapids, we had a full 10 days, I think it was, before we were, it was a good,
Was that a Friday Saturday regional?
it was a Saturday Sunday regional.
Okay.
Of course, this was in the 12 team days, so we had one game.
All right.
And then we won on Sunday. We beat Wisconsin, beat Danny Heatley, and then went.
How good was Hutch in that game? He's great.
Heatley was done after the first period. He's like, he fired a late shot at Miller after the horn. And that was it for him. He was checked out. He's like, "Where's my contract? Where's the thrash?"
Yeah.
But just,
Yeah, then you get out to
I
your,
think it's
yeah.
nice to be able to press that reset button a little bit and let,
So much better for fans.
it's way better for fans. I think it's better for the teams too. You know, yeah. You get a chance to enjoy what you accomplished at the regional. You kind of let that wash over you a little bit. And, you know, I'm looking at UMD. I mean, those are two hard games that they had to battle through.
Yeah.
You know, so they deserve, you know, 24 or 48 hours to enjoy what they accomplished there. And then you can kind of, you know, have your afterglow and for a couple days and, you know, look back on it and then get back to work, you know, two, three days later. I think it works out nice in that regard for the teams. I'm sure there's some teams who would probably just like to keep going and plow through, but I do like the break for the fans and I do like the break for the teams.
That even on a much more condensed scale is the same thing with Frozen Friday. I always loved going to those Friday skates after the semifinals because you're still, you know, a day plus till you have to take the ice for the championship game. You're still kind of psyched about what you did the previous night and in the semis. And it's, you know, you're not putting in new systems on that Friday.
No.
You know, you are what you are by that point. And
yeah, it's more or less don't get hurt.
Folks are in a good spot and happy to talk and do those kinds of things. So it was always a great, great atmosphere to be around for me when we were covering this thing.
That was your day.
That was my day, man.
That was your moving day.
Frozen Friday. The Masters on in the media workroom. And
yeah, I mean, I've never really talked to anybody about it, but I assume that most people are pleased. You know, and I think it makes it easier for people. If you want to go to both, you can go to both the regionals and the Frozen. You can make your plans and, you know, gives you some time to do that.
Yep. And also you don't get lost, because if you're
right.
The week before, you know, you got the basketball thing. And even for the women's basketball, moving to the Friday-Sunday of that weekend instead of the Sunday-Tuesday, you kind of still have that basketball momentum generated by the men's Final Four.
Yep.
And if those were both going on, you know, who's watching a, you know, Union-Minnesota game from Philly? Who knows?
At 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever time it is.
Right.
Yeah, I think I kind of like the separate stage. You know, and it works out. Yeah, I know that there's, you know, an NCAA calendar that most people kind of that probably obviously justify or plays into how this whole thing shakes down with hockey being a week later. But it also works out nice in terms of the hockey calendar. Because
right.
you're going into the NCAA tournament, you know, you got your league tournaments, you've got your NCAA tournaments, and then after this, you're going to go into the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and
so
the NHL
is
pretty much wrapped up. Everything's sewn up there.
Everything is pretty much taken care of. So it makes for a nice. It's a nice segue into the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It is. Any Stanley Cup thoughts? Teams I cheer for aren't going to be in this thing, so I'm going to have a couple teams to cheer against.
Yeah, that's kind
of... I was thinking, like, what order, my pecking order of, yep, nope, not them. Third would be maybe those guys, nope, not them. How about, well, nope, not them either. So, I think if there was five teams to pick that I would, like, cheer for, all five not in the playoffs.
Well, you got the Caps.
Caps probably would be in that 6-7 range for me now. Caps and Ducks, maybe.
I will.
I'm a Canucks and Islanders probably top two. They're not in this thing. Next up would probably be some combination of the Lightnings and the Sabres. They're not in it. And then, you know, maybe the Red Wings. A touch of the Red Wings? I don't know. Just because of Franz Nielsen. But I'll cheer for Ryan Getzlaff. He deserves another cup. I'll cheer for Ovi. He deserves a cup.
Yes, he does.
So there you go. Not I, Bruins well, and not Wilds. That's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah, I you know, I'm Vancouver as well, and
Sharks. I could be down with the Sharks.
They're done. Yeah, I can hang with the Sharks. I will, assuming they make the playoffs, I will pull for Toronto.
Leafs, yeah.
That's my Eastern Conference team. I don't know. I think there's some value in having Canadian teams go deep, and especially the teams that have the young talent. You know, with Edmonton and Toronto, and well, those are the two that stand out. I mean, I guess Calgary is pretty young too. So, but yeah, I'm sort of where you are. No Penguins and.
Yep.
So if the Penguins open up against Columbus, it looks like that'll be a fairly decent series. Is that how it goes?
I don't
the
know.
Two, I think the twos and threes in each
division will stay together.
Yeah, so Pittsburgh would play Columbus, Ottawa would play Boston as of right now, unless they get overtaken. Toronto, I think, would play Montreal. No, Toronto would play Washington, and the Rags would get Montreal.
Now, original six.
And let's see what we got on the other side here. I believe we would get Calgary, Anaheim. You know, there's a chance Edmonton has a game in hand. So there's a chance that it could be the first round could be Edmonton and Calgary.
Not shabby.
No, that would be worth the price of admission. And Nashville, Chicago, Wilds, St. Louis. And it could, I mean, you could be looking at Anaheim, San Jose as a first round too.
That's all good.
Yeah. So,
well, we've hammered that down. Seven out of town scores.
There are some out of town scores.
We got out of town scores. We got baseball's underway. We got big night at NHL.
Edmonton's up on the Kings 2-0.
Oh, live out of town scores. Okay.
Oh. Huh. In the out of town scores that really matter, the team of I was saying Boo Orgstrom is pacing the Revere Fantasy Pool.
Yeah, we've got a pretty tight race headed into the Frozen Four. Boo Orgstrom 23. Buses club. You can
That's
take
my
credit
team.
For that.
Well, actually, it's Troy Terry's club. He got
Troy
got
Terry
me
nine. Niner. Did I
he
catch
a put
niner,
up a
niner in there?
He put up a niner against 9 points against Penn. Was it Penn State?
Yeah,
yeah, Penn State.
Game.
That'll do.
Yeah.
Merrick Madsen put up five for me. So I'm up, but I've never won. So
never.
Never.
Well, the second place, currently second place, has never won.
No, rookie.
Rook, yeah, first, not our rook, but a rookie participant, but a long-time servant and friend and journalist of college hockey, Brad Schlossman.
Yep, he's in second.
Got in. He's at 21 points. Third is famous Jess Myers. 19 big points.
Yeah, and he's flying almost strictly UMD from here on out. Actually, he is.
Folks, you may be surprised to hear this, but he's got all Minnesota Duluth players. And then what? Fourth is multiple time champion, James Yonke, 17, and then I guess I'm kind of there in fifth place at 16 points. So
you're right there.
That's a pretty big stretch. I would need a niner to get back.
Well, you know what? Look at when I look at you. Yeah, you've got some guys going up against each other, but you've got Donato.
Yeah, we got. I was very happy. I got Adam Fox and Donato and Tanner Gillette through first three picks. I was pretty happy there.
Yeah.
Got my number one forward, number one D, and number one goalie on my draft board. So, for those of you who haven't figured this out yet, this is a fantasy contest that we've done with Inch and Friends of Inch dating way, way back. I believe this is the 19th year of the Paul Revere's tournament pool, so named after the pub in East Lansing where the draft was held way back in the day. Now it's done on that newfangled internet.
Yeah.
Prestigious.
International. It's an international league. Well, I guess it's not really, but.
Who would be international? Oh, yeah, well.
Puerto Rico is part
was,
of the U.S.
Dowd was, yeah. St. Thomas, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's no money involved, just the bragging rights and the prestige that comes from it.
And the prestigious orange beaver jersey.
Yeah, Bemidji State practice sweater, curling trophy, that somewhere.
I don't even know. I don't know where any of it is. We don't know where any of the
stuff is. probably Nate. I think he got a win once we still had that stuff around. But we're all over the country now. We're all spread out. So good way to stay in touch, especially this time of the year. And as many of us gather at the Frozen Four each and every year, it's part of the deal. So that's the out-of-town scores. Good luck to the participants. They're probably the only people listening to this podcast. So
at this point in time, yeah.
Good job, guys.
And if you want to have your own, we should.
Yeah, scoring format, real easy. 2 points for a goal, one for an assist. Bonus point for a power play goal, shorty, or overtime goal. 2 points for a goalie win, one bonus point for a goalie shutout. So
yep.
There you go. Our format, because we've got about a dozen folks in this, and it kind of seems to fit the size of the tournament and the amount of scores you would want to have, is to pick your regular lineup through the first six rounds. Three forwards, 2D, and a goalie. And then the seventh and eighth round, you just take any position. Those are wild card players. Then after the regionals, you have a chance to cut two guys and add two more that are yet to be drafted. So when you see Notre Dame or Harvard or Minnesota Duluth or Denver go through, and you add one of those guys and dump somebody useless from Cornell who got shut out.
Or you dump the number one pick overall.
The number one pick was made during our Selection Sunday podcast. It was made by James Dowd. It was not a good pick.
No, it was Jamarcus Russell.
And it was the Jamarcus Russell of the Revere's pool.
Yeah.
So that was that. We will, of course, not mention that player.
No, we won't.
So that's it. Have a great time in Chicago, Bus.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
I'll be tuned in. St. Paul's after this, right?
St. Paul's after this, and then we're going to name some sites, it sounds like. Is it the following week?
Yeah. Maybe that'll leak out this weekend.
I'll have to keep my ear to the ground.
Yeah, start to work our network and see if we can find something out.
I'm gonna guess Tampa is probably one of them.
Yeah, the next sites after this should be Tampa, 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 and then Tampa and Tampa again. You and I, long-time advocates of that, and so much to the fact that I've said, and it was actually one of the last stories we did at Inch, was make this college hockey's bowl game.
Yep.
The Omaha permanent site for baseball that they have. I think it works. I think it works for a lot of reasons. But all right, so that's that. Games will be great. Times will be great. And the hockey will be awesome. Congratulations to the teams that made it. Congratulations to the other teams on great seasons. And thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. For Mike Autobus, this is Joe Gladyszewski. Appreciate it. Cheers to you all.